Where these measures are followed, cases go down. Where they are not, cases go up.
Those are words we've been hearing for a while, but not everyone is listening. This is Tuesday, the 28th of July, and this is VOA Asia. Also ahead, U.S. protesters battle federal police on a wider scale. China occupies what had been the U.S. consulate in one of its largest cities. South Korea revokes the licenses of two North Korea defector groups. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The World Health Organization warns that COVID-19 is continuing to accelerate globally at breathtaking speed, but says basic public health measures, if followed, can control its spread and turn the pandemic around. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The number of coronavirus cases globally has roughly doubled in the past 6 weeks. More than 16 million cases of the virus have been reported to the World Health Organization, including more than 640,000 deaths. The Americas is the most seriously affected region, with the United States topping the number of infections at more than 4 million cases and over 143,000 deaths. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says many lessons have been learned since the pandemic was declared a public health emergency of international concern on January 30th. The most important, he says, is that those countries that have applied basic health measures are containing the virus. He says finding, isolating, testing, and tracing contacts, as well as social distancing and wearing masks, can suppress transmission and save lives.
Where these measures are followed, cases go down. Where they are not, cases go up. Countries and communities that have followed this advice carefully and consistently have done well.
Tedros says countries such as Cambodia, New Zealand, Rwanda, and Thailand have succeeded in preventing large-scale outbreaks by following this advice. He says other countries, including Canada, China, and Germany, have brought large outbreaks under control by applying these basic measures. Executive Director of WHO Health Emergencies Mike Ryan says countries that have implemented control measures have suppressed the virus. But when those measures are lifted, the virus returns.
What is clear that pressure on the virus successfully pushes the numbers down, release pressure on the virus, and the numbers can creep back up. Every single country where pressure has been lifted on the virus, where virus is still at community level, there's been a jump back in cases.
WHO officials agree that continuing transmission of COVID-19 and its resurgence in countries where it had been controlled is worrying. However, they say countries can turn the pandemic around by maintaining pressure on the virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Vietnam is evacuating tourists from the Da Nang area after several people tested positive for COVID-19. Human rights groups warn that more than a million people in Phnom Penh face the risk of increased flooding and loss of livelihoods as wetlands in the Cambodian capital are destroyed to build apartments and industries. Pakistan and China have refuted as absurd and fabricated media reports that the two close allies are jointly conducting secret research to develop biological weapons in breach of global treaties. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Australia has recorded its deadliest weekend since the COVID-19 pandemic began. More than 800 new infections have been recorded, 15 more deaths. Australia has had at least 14,400 confirmed coronavirus infections. 161 people have died. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Face coverings are mandatory in the Victorian state capital, Melbourne. but a woman who refused to wear a mask in a hardware store and filmed her confrontation with staff was later fined by the police.
He's asking if you've got a mask.
Well, it's clear I don't. And you are not authorised to ask me or question me about it.
Would you like to speak to the manager?
Sure.
The Victorian state government reimposed a lockdown in Melbourne and a large area to the north of Australia's second most populous city on July 8. It is scheduled to end on August 19, but could be extended if the COVID-19 crisis isn't contained. More than 530 new infections of coronavirus were reported Monday in Victoria. It is a new daily record for case numbers. Medical workers are pleading with the community to obey lockdown restrictions. Residents can only leave their homes for essential tasks. Abby is a clinical nurse specialist at the Royal Melbourne Hospital's emergency department.
Your temporary but greatly appreciated sacrifice means both you and my colleagues and I will eventually see the light at the end of this very long road, and we collectively may see the end of the pandemic. So please, for the last time, stay home, wear a mask.
Outbreaks have been reported at dozens of aged care facilities in Victoria. The southern state is the epicentre of Australia's COVID-19 emergency, and more troops are being deployed to support a struggling health system. Retired medical staff and paramedics are also being drafted to help. 17 new infections were reported Monday in New South Wales, Australia's most populous state. No fresh infections were detected in the state of Queensland. In Sydney, a planned march by Aboriginal protesters Tuesday has been banned because of public health fears. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Malaysian officials say 24 Rohingya migrants are feared drowned off a Malaysian resort island near Thailand. Malaysia's Coast Guard said 25 people had tried to swim to shore late Saturday, but only one of them made it to the island. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Chinese authorities have taken control of the former U.S. consulate in the Chinese city of Chengdu after it was ordered closed in retaliation for a U.S. order to vacate the Chinese consulate in Houston, Texas. Associated Press correspondent Zuria Shakely has more.
The forced closure of the Chinese consulate in Houston and China's order in response to shutter the U.S. consulate in Chengdu mark a new low point in ties between the world's largest economies that can't easily be smoothed over. China's foreign minister issued a brief notice saying competent authorities entered through the front entrance and took over the premises after U.S. diplomats closed it at 10 a.m. The U.S. alleged that the Houston consulate was a nest of Chinese spies who tried to steal data from facilities in Texas. China said the allegations were malicious slander. I'm Zaria Shakli.
This is VOA Asia. South Korea revoked the licenses of two North Korean defector groups this past weekend. VOA Steve Miller spoke with our Seoul bureau chief, Bill Gallo, via Kakao about what led Seoul to cancel the licenses of Fighters for a Free North Korea and Kusayam Education Center.
Yeah, these balloon launches are not new. For years, South Korean NGOs, mainly North Korean defectors is who runs these groups. They've sent balloons full of pretty provocative leaflets ridiculing North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, or North Korea's human rights record. And these are pretty provocative launches. They contain stuff that, is not necessarily pleasant, and North Korea never likes them, but they have tolerated them to varying degrees. And so has the South Korean government. However, the current South Korean government very much wants to improve relations with North Korea. And so they treat these launches now as something that could damage these efforts. And essentially, they've done everything they can to stop them. They've tried to outlaw them. They've actually trailed these activists. It's really, really a widespread effort to stop these activists from launching balloons.
And as I understand it, sometimes the government has said that they may have actually increased tensions, because when I was living in Seoul, there were times when North Korea would use artillery from the north side to try and shoot down these balloons as they were crossing into the North Korean territory.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not a completely, unsubstantiated accusation that these launches raise tensions. As you mentioned, there was a very high profile instance where the North and South Korean militaries exchanged gunfire after North Korea actually began a shooting at the launch site of where one of these launches occurred several years ago. And it's important to note that in South Korea, I would say more than 50% of people support some kind of ban on these launches. They really don't like tensions to be raised. This is something that a lot of people feel puts them in danger here in South Korea.
That being said, what's been the reaction to this move within the North Korean defector community?
It's pretty harsh. I mean, I haven't seen language like this used yet since my time here in South Korea. I mean, a lot of North Korean defectors and just human rights activists in general in South Korea view this as an attempt to pretty much completely squash out the North Korean human rights community in South Korea. There is, I think, some justification for that. If you remove the NGO license from these groups, you would complicate their ability to raise money. If they can't raise money, they can't not only do launches, they can't do a lot of other things. So the criticism has been harsh, not only in South Korea, but also from international human rights groups.
Now, these rights groups often say that the reason for these launches is to provide information to those in North Korea. And this is coming at a time when North Korea has clamped down in a particular region near the border because of what appears to be a fear that COVID-19 has reached North Korea, in a country that has famously said, we have no cases.
Yeah, right. It's true. I mean, North Korea for months has said they're one of the very only countries that have actually said that they have no coronavirus cases. That actually changed sort of this weekend when North Korean state media basically blamed a North Korean defector who had been living in South Korea for the past 3 years, bringing the coronavirus back into North Korea when he came across the border. That was complicated a little bit today by the fact that South Korea said, yeah, okay, we think this guy did go back from South Korea and to North Korea, but we don't think he had the coronavirus.
VOA Steve Miller speaking with our Seoul Bureau Chief, Bill Gallo.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. The U.S. ambassador to South Korea has shaved off his mustache to stay cool during the hot summer, just months after his facial hair drew unusual criticism from anti-U.S. activists who likened it to those of former Japanese colonial leaders. All the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The race continues for a vaccine effective against the coronavirus. Experts agree that until one exists, the best countermeasures remain social distancing, masks, and frequent hand washing. Early detection can help control the spread, and as VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, troops in Germany have already begun training their four-legged counterparts.
Recently, at this academy in Ulm, Germany, army trainers tested a new weapon in the fight against the coronavirus. German Defense Minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer says this dog training program is a first of its kind.
The school is unique for the military, but even in an international context, it is a special asset that we can offer. Here, it is not just people being trained at school, but dogs and people training side by side.
The dogs can't sniff out the actual virus, but they can detect the biochemical changes it causes in saliva. These dogs produce results with samples as small as 100 microliters.
To put it simply, we're investigating whether service dogs can be used to detect COVID-19. Not because they can smell the virus itself, but they can smell the biochemical processes and the changes caused by the virus.
Kramp-Karrenbauer says while tests are encouraging, studies remain ongoing.
I want to make clear here the next steps. Like, for example, differentiating between coronavirus and influenza, or to differentiate an active carrier, are all questions to be answered. And so we'll need more months to be able to offer up clear results.
Military dog trainers and the Hanover University of Veterinary Medicine are currently working with a variety of breeds on a rewards-based system where dogs get treats for properly identifying tainted saliva. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
The Washington Post reported Monday the Trump administration is sending at least 100 additional federal officers to Portland, Oregon, as confrontations between anti-racism protesters and federal authorities have intensified. The U.S. Marshals Service decided last week to send 100 deputy marshals to fortify authorities guarding the federal courthouse in downtown Portland, citing an internal email, according to the Washington Post. The Department of Homeland Security is considering sending 50 additional Customs and Border Protection personnel to that city. AP correspondent Julie Walker has more on what happened over the weekend.
Protests took a violent turn in several U.S. cities over the weekend as the demonstrations against racial injustice that began months ago in the wake of the death of George Floyd after Minneapolis police were seen kneeling on his neck show no signs of letting up. In Portland, Oregon, another night of tear gas set off by federal agents outside the courthouse as protesters chanted for them to leave the city. Police say arrests were made, a gun was recovered, and someone ended up in the hospital with an unexplained gunshot. In Seattle, police were forced to retreat into a station house. In California and Richmond, Virginia, vehicles were set on fire, and in Austin, Texas, an armed protester was shot and killed after police say he approached a car that had driven through a demonstration and that driver shot him. And authorities in Aurora, Colorado say someone was shot and wounded after a car drove through a protest there. I'm Julie Walker.
Researchers at Oxford University recently announced promising results from early trials of their version of the COVID-19 vaccine. In early trial results on just over 1,000 volunteers, the vaccine did appear to be safe and triggered an immune response. VOA spoke with one volunteer who has participated in phase 2 trials. VOA's Anna Rice reports.
The entire world is working to find an effective vaccine to fight the COVID pandemic. Currently, there are nearly 150 different vaccines in various stages of production, but just about a dozen are in expanded human trials. One of those vaccines is being produced at Oxford University. Bronco Rittman volunteered to be part of those trials.
I couldn't see myself contributing in any other meaningful way because I'm not a health professional. I don't work in a hospital. I'm not a nurse. And I think that vaccine is possibly the only way for us to get back to normal and to manage to live with this virus in a way that is not hurting our economy, that is not separating people.
The trials involved receiving a shot about 6 weeks ago and then constant monitoring.
I did a blood test after 1 month, and then the next blood test is going to be after 3 months, then 6 months, and then a year, in which they're testing whether I have antibodies in my bloodstream. Other than that, I'm testing myself with a regular PCR swab test every week.
One interesting element of the trials for Rittman is that a number of volunteers didn't actually receive the vaccine, but a placebo.
The placebo vaccine that was being given to 50% of the people is an actual meningitis vaccine that we get in childhood usually. So I don't know if I got the meningitis vaccine or not, but it's a real vaccine. So I don't know if I got that one or the COVID one, but they've asked me to behave normally as if I would had I not gotten the vaccine.
So far, Rittman says he's had no side effects and that he's proud to be part of these trials.
I haven't seen my parents for 6 months. There's a lot of people who haven't seen their elderly members of family. So anything that could be done to hasten the solution, I think it's everybody's duty to try and contribute.
Experts say it is possible a vaccine could start to become available for human use late this year or early next year. Anna Rice for VOA News, Washington.
Artist Dominic Cocozza is only 18 years old, but his painting of two migrant children holding a sign that reads, "Bring Our Mom Back," is already being displayed at the U.S. Capitol. Another work of his is hanging in the Smithsonian Hirshhorn Museum. Adopted from Guatemala, Dominic focuses his work around the U.S. immigration crisis. Maxim Moskalkov talked with the young artist.
Two young children, a boy and a girl, hold a sign that reads, "Bring Our Mom Back." This painting, called Simply Immigration, is the work of an 18-year-old Dominic Cocozza and has already made its way to the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. In 2019, Cocozza won in the annual art competition organized by the U.S. Congress.
I concentrated on the United States immigration crisis, and that was something that I felt deserved an empathetic and legal solution. So when I saw kids that, you know, looked like me when I was younger, you know, behind cages and in bars and stuff, it was really jaw-dropping that that was even an issue that even had to be discussed. I couldn't believe that that was a thing that was happening.
Cocozza says his work was inspired by the family separation policy executed at the U.S.-Mexican border. His works did not go unnoticed. A Virginia congressman, Don Bayer, noticed the paintings. And suddenly, the basement of Cocozza's parents' home, where the young man worked, was filled with journalists.
It's supposed to be a representation of the sadness that these kids were feeling. It was really an emotional painting that I wanted to portray.
Dominic and his sister were born in Guatemala, but were adopted by an American family when they were still infants. Today, the young artists live in Arlington, just a few kilometers away from the U.S. Capitol. But despite all that, he never forgets about where he came from.
It's a model of my family. I live in a primarily white community, so for me that was my personal difference. And so I have my sister and me, who were adopted from Guatemala as infants, painted a different color than the rest of the rocks. And these rocks are supposed to represent different families in their communities. And then the water represents how communities are always changing and ever the same.
This painting also won in a competition held by the Smithsonian and was exhibited at the Hirshhorn Museum in downtown D.C. For many years now, seasoned artist Gavin Glaikas has been Dominic's mentor.
He's a very impressive young man, and he has that combination of real drive to learn and improve and further his talent level. It'll be fascinating to see where he goes with his work and career. He's obviously interested in those issues.
Dominic has been painting since he was small. When he just started school, he was already invited to take part in local exhibits.
That was an indication that it wasn't just his mom thinking he had some talent. There were other people saying, "We'd like to take his work and show it in the county." And after a couple of years of that, I approached the school and said, "Do you think that he may be gifted in visual arts?" And they said, "We think so. Why don't you fill out the application and we'll go through the formal process."
In the fall of 2020, Dominic Cocozza will start his education at the Rhode Island School of Design, one of the oldest art schools in the country. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for being with us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please do your best to stay healthy and enjoy your day.